Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 3, text 40. Indriyani mano buddhir asyadhishtanam uchyate etair vimohyatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. Indriyani mano buddhir asyadhishtanam uchyate etair vimohyatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. Indriyani mano buddhir asyadhishtanamuchyate etair vimohyatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real intelligence of the living entity and bewilders him. Purport. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. And therefore, Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. The false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyatma buddhi kurnape tridhatuke swadhi kalatradeshu bhoma ijadihi. Yatirta buddhi salile nakarhi jidjanesh fabignyeshu sa eva go karaha. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Indriyani mano buddhir asyadhishtana muchyate etair vimohyatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Srila Prabhupada starts the purport by stating, the enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. Why does he bring in this topic of an enemy? Whereas there's no enemy in this verse. Well, it's stated in the previous verse and will be stated just after this also, that jnanina nitya vairina, that the lust is the enemy of the conditioned soul, because avritam jnana maitena, because covers the knowledge. So just like an enemy. This Bhagavad Gita is the wrong way up. It's facing downwards. The Bhagavad Gita should not be put upside down. Yeah, just put it in the... Yeah, you can put it in, but not upside down. And therefore, the living being in the material world identify, because of material desire, what identifies with the body. Because the material body is the medium for enjoying in this world. And in this way, one's knowledge is covered because one identifies with the material body because of the desire to enjoy this material world. How is that actually manifested? Well, that's manifested in everything that everyone in the material world does and says and thinks. It's a very severe covering. There's no sign of any true consciousness. It manifests as the bodily concept of life, thinking oneself to be the body. And some symptoms of that are given in this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that Srila Prabhupada has quoted in the purport, that one thinks that this body, which is made of three elements, that's mucus, bile, and air, thinks that to be oneself. One thinks that my wife and relatives, deha patya kalatra adishu, the same word comes up, kalatra adishu, the children and the wife, they're mine. They're intimately related with me. And that the land that one is born in that one lives in is worshipable. It's so wonderful. And who goes to a... These are some symptoms of someone in the bodily concept of life. So religion is supposed to lift us above that. Religion is... In the human form of life, there's religion. There's no... Sometimes we hear about animals that are intelligent, just like we hear the dogs are intelligent, the monkeys are intelligent, dolphins are intelligent, but not so intelligent that they can have any religion. I mean, you can train a dog to do all kinds of tricks. So you could train a dog to dance on his hind legs in the kirtan. You could do that. And no doubt the living being in the form of a dog will get some benefit. But the religious sense, knowing that I am not of this world, I have a higher duty, I have a link with God, that takes that is possible in the human form of life. Unfortunately, we see that religion is misused. All the great religious teachers, the founders of the world's great religions. Who are the founders? There's Lord Jesus Christ, Hazrat Muhammad, Buddha. Then there's Guru Gobind Singh, and it's a bit difficult to say in Jainism, but the Tirthankars. Who's the founder of Hinduism? There's no founder, as it's not based around a particular... Actually, it's based around Krishna, but what is nowadays called Hinduism was going on before Krishna appeared in this world. So therefore, it's called Sanatan Dharma. That's one reason. The better term than Hinduism is Sanatan Dharma. But that actually is not, because Hinduism is mixed up with demigod worship and so many things concerned with this world, so the real Sanatana Dharma is Jiveshwarup Hari Krishna Nitya Das, that the living being's eternal activity is, proper activity is as the servant of Krishna. But the religious people, they tend to... take religion as something to do with their body. An example is given here. Yatirta buddhi salilena karhi jid janeshvabhigneshu sa eva gokura. One who goes to a holy place only to take a bath and doesn't associate, that's not stated here, but it's implied, not to associate with the saintly people who live there and to take instruction. Then such people, they are not very intelligent, didn't understand the point, because even though such people in Hindu culture, people they believe in reincarnation, but they think that, well, I have to enjoy in every life. I have to set up my life so that I can enjoy in the next life also. Instead of thinking that this rebirth is miserable, they'll think I have to enjoy in this life and the next life and future lives. So if I go to a holy place, I can take bath and get free from my sins, and then great. Then I can, if I'm free from sins, then I won't get any bad reaction and I can enjoy in this world. So it's missing the point. People go in the Ganga, they bathe in the Ganga to get free from sins, but the real point is to worship Ganga as she is coming from the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva. She's carrying devotion to him, but foolish people just think that they want to get their sins mitigated. But actually, they're not as foolish as complete atheists. But they missed the real point. And so deeply in the consciousness that I am this body, that they reconvert religion into something connected with this body. Just like here in Croatia, if you want to be a real Croatian nationalist, you have to be a Catholic, right? There's no question. If you're an Orthodox, no way. That's for the nasty Serbs. We don't like them. What is this? It's bodily consciousness. Because I'm born in Croatia, then I'm a Catholic, and it's all part of the package of being a Croatian. And it's there in Russia. They're promoting that. It wasn't there during the whole communist time. But it's being brought back that a real Russian is Orthodox. Years ago, I remember being on a train in Russia. In our compartment, there were two men, and one was saying, I didn't understand Russian, but later it was translated. He was saying he'd just come from Chechnya, and he said he was using this knife for cutting the meat which he was eating. He said, with this knife, I cut so many people's eyes out, and cut off their ears. He was boasting to his friend. And then looking at us, the two of us dressed in Vaishnav dress, he said, we're Ruski, we're Russians. Jesus, or whatever. Looking at it, the devotee who was with me is also Russian by birth, by citizenship, but that's not Russian. Hare Krishna, not Russian. Russian means you're a good Orthodox Christian and good member of the Russian army goes to Chechnya and cuts people's eyes out and ears off, and that's all part of being a good Christian, isn't it? Well, anyway, that seemed to be his idea. So it's all part of the bodily concept of life. It's something like tribal consciousness that according to Darwinian legend, when man was first man, then there were hunters and gatherers. The people who, they didn't have that, even before there was agriculture, people would gather food, they would go in the forest and find some berries and roots to eat, and they'd hunt wild pigs. Do you get wild pigs running here in this forest? Deer, I saw one deer when I was running. There must be so many deer. So they'd hunt pigs and deer and maybe catch fish and this and that. So by hunting and gathering, they got their food. And of course, there are still tribal people in the world, not many these days. But I saw in Navadvip Mandal years ago, we were away from any town, and we saw some people just wearing some kopins and running around with their bows and arrows in Mayapur at that time. So such tribal people still exist. And still in India they have the tribes, they have the They perpetuate the caste system. They say they're trying to get rid of it, but they perpetuate it in the census. They see what is everyone's caste, and one of them is not a caste, it's below a caste. I mean, it's not Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Below that, one of them is scheduled tribes. So if you're from a tribe, then you can get in a university place, even if you're stupid, because they want to try and bring the people up. If you're intelligent, it's very difficult to get a place. You have to in the university, but if you're tribal, very easy, because they want to artificially bring them up. There's been going on, this reservation system has been going on for decades, and still the tribals are tribals, and I mean, they're not running around with bows and arrows, but they're not able to uplift themselves. Anyway, I'm getting diverted here. So it's a tribal consciousness that a few people come together and they protect each other. And if there's any other tribe who comes in their hunting territory, they'll fight with them and drive them out. They protect each other because wild pigs can be, you may go and hunt them, they may come and attack you also. Or they don't attack much, but if you go in their territory, they may attack. They can be very dangerous and kill the wild pigs. Anyone get killed in Croatia still from wild pigs? He was very severely injured by a pig, a wild boar actually. It's the males who have the tusks who are very dangerous. So that's going on even to the present day, because that area is all forest. That leak is a national forest, right? National park. Bears, do you get here? Yes. In Croatia, you don't get bears, yeah.
Not here, but in Lika, yes.
Oh, I see. Not here, but in Lika area. They're also, they're dangerous also? They attack?
Not so much,
yeah. Yeah. Usually they attack if they're attacked, but they're very... And it depends on the size of them also. Big bears can be... Generally, they won't attack humans, but only if they're threatened or something like that. So it can be. So the tribal people, they all get together and they defend each other and they help each other and they identify absolutely with the tribe. They don't have any philosophy. We won't find any philosophers coming out of tribal people. They're just like animals in many ways. You can't say that because it's considered politically incorrect, but practically speaking, what do? They eat, sleep, mate, and defend, and they don't have any. They don't have any of the trappings of civilization, such as they may not even have any house to live in. In many cases, if they're in a warm place, they may just in a warm climate, they may just dig some hole in the earth or find some cave to live in. Of course, sadhus, they may do that also, but they're not doing it because they're sadhus. They're not doing it because they're doing for any uplift of consciousness, but because they're living just like animals, that's all. And then they don't have any... they may have some primitive art, actually. You'll find that they say that in some caves in France and other places, there are paintings on the wall which they say are from cavemen, and it shows hunting and gathering. Of course, elephants can paint pictures also. You have to provide them with the facilities to do so, but elephants can also paint pictures. So an elephant's also not a very intelligent animal. Big body, but not very intelligent. Among the animals, they're not definitely more intelligent than squids or something like that, but not considered highly intelligent. Oh, actually, I was saying about devotion, but there are stories of elephants who are devotees. Gajendra is the most famous, and that was a special case. In South India, Guruvayur temple, the elephant Keshav. He was such a great devotee. They made a statue of him after he passed away. So, but that's rare. So, Guruvayur's Krishna temple, the most famous Krishna temple in Kerala. It's the tribal consciousness. We all come together and we protect each other. So nationalism is the same kind of consciousness. There was no nationalism previously. There weren't big kingdoms. There may have been big kingdoms, but if there were bigger kingdoms, people tended to relate to themselves as a member of society, and they're under such and such a king. And the borders may change as different kings take power, and then one king may take another's area, and then one king may divide his territory between his sons, and in this way the borders change. But the system stays the same. That in Varnashram society, it doesn't matter who the king is, just you have to pay your taxes or whatever. That's all. And it's fixed idea. That's why, was one reason why in India they didn't mind so much being ruled by Muslims, so we're told, because it was the same system. You have to pay the tax to someone. And there are stories that in one field, the farmer would be plowing his land, and in the next field, the Kshatriyas would be fighting. And then there's no question of attacking the farmer, or the farmer didn't care who wins. Whoever wins, I have to pay my tax, that's all. So, that tribal consciousness has been brought into modern life with national consciousness. And religion is very often a major part of that tribal consciousness. It's actually used by the leaders, it's used as a political tool to control people. As Karl Marx said, that religion is the opium of the people. And in many ways, he was right. Religion has a higher purpose, but it can be used also to motivate people, to control them. Then if you say that, well, the king is the representative of God, which is actually a fact, should be the representative of God, but then that can be, if that's used in the wrong way, instead of acting like God toward his citizens in a very protective and affectionate manner, instead if he wants to exploit them, then they threw all the kings out. And part of throwing the kings out was the rejection of religion. We see in Europe that the kings were thrown out, and then religion. Of course, it was an ongoing long process with the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and the discoveries and philosophy, but the idea of the king being the representative of God, that is, there are no kings, and how are they going to represent God if there's no king? My page got lost due to the due to the wind blowing. We can call this religion. It's not really meant to elevate people to higher consciousness. We're stuck in this material world because of lower consciousness, because of desire. And religion should give us the knowledge by which we can become free from desire. But instead, it keeps us in tribal consciousness. And it's not necessarily fighting with each other's. It may be in, or that fighting spirit is channeled very much in the modern age into sports. In in Scotland, there are two major football teams, Celtic for the Catholics and Rangers for the Protestants. And if you're Catholic, you support Celtic, and if you're Protestant, you support Rangers. And I was in Celtic, their team color is green. So I was at we have our one ISKCON center near Glasgow. They're both centered in Glasgow, or Glasgow, depends where, which part of Britain you're from, how you pronounce it, or Glasgow, if you're from Glasgow. They say, so I was told, we were just at the traffic lights, we were driving to this center, just outside, but it permeates all of Scotland and even into Ireland. Because they have the Catholic-Protestant divide there is even stronger than in Scotland. It's still very strong. So what happened at the traffic light, they say regularly what happens in this town is that people, it's all Protestant town, so the green light, they paint it over black because they don't want to see green. They're so anti, because it reminds them of the other football team. World Cup soccer, 1970, before you were all born. I was watching it on TV, live from Mexico. Was it 1970? Yeah, it was 1970. And at that time, whenever these South American players scored a goal, before they jumped with all their teammates, what would they do? They would kneel down and say a prayer, crossing themselves. Later, I thought that was very good. At least they're somewhat really thinking that God's helping me. But then in another way, why should God care whether your team wins or not? Both teams are playing. Both the supporters of both teams are praying. Let God help us. Let God help us win. But why should God care whether your team wins or not? What does it matter to God? He doesn't teach. He doesn't come to the... Jesus didn't come to the world to say, support the Israel football team. Or whatever, or the Celtic football team, or the Rangers football team, or any football team, because there were no football teams in those times. It's the same consciousness, tribal consciousness. Our group, we're Catholics, they're Protestants. We're Protestants, they're Catholics. And they are bad. Why? Because they're Protestants. And nothing more to be said. No. Or if you're a Catholic, they're bad because they're Protestants. And nothing else to say. Just in Croatia, they're Serbians, bad. Why? Because they're Serbians. And they're not Catholics. So everything about them is bad. They're Serbian, and if that's not, they're Orthodox. So that's bad, right? It's all bad. So there's no reason in particular why. It's just because in our tribe, we are Catholics, and we are Croatians. And in their tribe, they speak the same language more or less, but they now, it used to be the same language more or less, but now they're deliberately making it different, right? The Serbs, they deliberately use different words. In Bangladesh also, the few words are different between the Hindus and the Muslims. The Hindus will say jal for water, and the Muslims will say pani. And in West Bengal, they all say Pani, Muslims, Hindus, everyone, pretty much. But you can know, he's a Hindu, he said Jal, not Pani, for water. So there's no consideration that actually Jesus, what did he come to teach us? He didn't teach us support the Celtic football team. He taught that you have to love God with all your heart. And loving God with all your heart, somehow they equate that with cheering one particular football team. And it gets worse. I mean, in Northern Ireland, well, they're some of the most violent football fans in all of Britain are from Scotland, actually. And I don't know about now, but when I was a kid, and Glasgow was the most violent city in Britain, that was before, well, if you don't include Belfast, where they have, I mean, they weren't just fighting. In Glasgow, knife fighting. Now it's everywhere all over Britain. It was widespread. I'll tell you a story in Glasgow. I came by bus into Glasgow once, the one and only time I visited. I was how old? 14, something like that. So I go in the toilet and there's a wino, these guys, alcoholics. So I'm in the toilet. He says to me, "Can I borrow your knife?" I couldn't understand because of his accent. And I didn't know what to say because I couldn't understand. And then he said, "Can I borrow your knife?" And I said, "I don't have a knife." He said, "Look, no, you see, I just want to," because his bottle of wine or whiskey or whatever it was, the top of it, he tried to open it, but it was just going round and round, so he needed a knife to cut it. So he didn't believe me that I didn't have a knife. I was 14 years old or so. That was the condition. He was just trying to show me. I just needed to get the top of his, to cut the top of his wine bottle. So such a condition. No doubt he was a good Catholic or a good Protestant, along with being an alcoholic, down and out type. So there's no real consideration what Jesus came to teach or what in any religion. In Sri Lanka, they had this war between the Sinhalese, who are Buddhists, and the Tamil Hindus and Christians. They didn't target, for some reason, the Muslims. The Muslims in Sri Lanka, they're all Tamils also, but somehow they stayed out of it. And while the other people were bombing each other and killing each other, they were increasing their population and increasing their businesses and everything. And now the politicians are stirring up the Buddhists against the Muslims, or the present government's trying to control that and stop it. But if the rival party government comes in, they'll promote it more and more, because that's the way they want to get the vote. So why should Buddhism promote violence when Lord Buddha taught ahimsa paramo dharma, the topmost dharma, translated as religion, is non-violence. But somehow that gets lost and forgotten. What are the teachings? That's not the point. It's just that we're Buddhist. Sinhalese means Buddhist. There are a handful of non-Buddhist Sinhalese, which some Christians and this and that. But so we're Buddhist. So who are these people? They invaded our country hundreds of years ago, and we don't like them. So there's no search for the truth or trying to understand actually what we're supposed to be doing as a Christian or Muslim or Jew. Judaism is absolutely a tribal religion. It's just based on the idea that if you're a Jew, you're the chosen people, right? They're special. If you're a Jew, something special. God's chosen people. So in America also, the idea that a real American is a Christian, that idea is there. Not just a Christian, but a Protestant. When the Catholic, first waves of Catholics started coming in, the Catholics were very much disliked in America because they're Christians, but they're Catholics. They're not Protestants like us. And it was a big thing when John F. Kennedy got elected as the President of the United States. It was unthinkable that a Catholic could become the president. So that's died down, the anti-Catholic thing. But still there's that idea that a real American is a Christian. Of course, maybe half the population is not very much into, or their idea of Christian, when they say Christian, they particularly mean evangelical Christian, hardcore Bible bashing, as they call it. In India also, now this, in previously Hinduism, there was no fighting, hardly in the history, hardly any fighting between Hindus. Like you have Christians, internal fighting, Catholics against Protestants, especially, and Christians against, practically the political, social landscape of Europe for hundreds of years, a major factor was Christians marching off to the Holy Land to kill those infidels and take back Jerusalem for the people it really belongs to, which is the Christians. And still Jerusalem, it's a flashpoint with Christians think it's our city, Jews thinks it's our city, and Muslims thinks it's our city. So it's a very, very tense place because they don't like each other. Maybe the Jews like the Christians a bit more, but definitely the Muslims, they don't like either. Anyway, I'm just generalizing here. I'm sure there are some people who like each other. So in Hinduism, there wasn't there. There was vigorous verbal disagreement, debates among Brahmins over philosophy. And there was conversion, you could say, from one into Hindu sects, just like, especially in the medieval times, there were what we call medieval, it's such a European term, but there were so many religious preachers, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Annamacharya in the south, and Kabir and Guru Nanak and Suradas and so many, Vallabhacharya, so many. They were preaching and bringing people into various, mostly bhakti cults. So people could change their allegiance within Hinduism or to Sikhism, which was not considered. Anyway, that's another topic. So, but there was, even when the Muslims came, the Hindus, if they fought against the Muslims, it wasn't a Hindu-Muslim fighting. It's just that they're attacking and you fight back and defend. The idea of Hindus fighting Muslims came up much later. But now we find that the present in Hinduism, there's this Hindutva is being promoted, and it doesn't exactly translate as Hinduism. It means the state of being a Hindu, and it's being promoted that you have to, a real Indian is a Hindu, and increasingly, there are cases of Muslims being forced by militant Hindus to chant Jai Shri Ram, which they might do if they were induced to do so. They might do happily, because there are many Muslims even today who celebrate Ram Navami in North India especially. But it's a militant kind of Hinduism. Now, there may be some grounds for that, because some 20 to 25 years ago or so, I heard that what happened, whenever there were Hindu-Muslim riots, which used to be very common in India, it used to be almost always in Muslim-dominated areas. So what happened maybe 25 years ago, the Hindus started pushing back. In Muslim-dominated areas means the Muslims attack. This is what I've heard. Exactly, if there are any figures, I don't know. So in what happened when there were Muslims who would attack Hindus, then in majority Hindu areas, they started doing atrocious things to Muslims, and then the Muslims got the message, and then there are much less Hindu-Muslim riots. Practically, you don't get there. Not much, hardly, because the Muslims... So I'm told. I'm not making a political statement here, but so I'm told. Or you could say it's like common knowledge among people who are interested in this kind of thing. And there are many of them in India that if Hindus can be religiously tolerant, but it's maybe not such a good policy. And if you're more nasty back to them than they are to you, then that keeps them under control. But it just increases the tribal consciousness. Of course, the Muslim-Hindu question, it's a very difficult question in India. I'm not saying we have... Actually, the solution is everyone should accept that Ishvara Allah Tera Nam Sapko Sanmati De Bhagavan. God is one. But there'll be differences because the Muslims, they like to eat cows. They like to kill cows, not just eat, but kill them. And Hindus are against that. And it's very complex. Actually, everyone should become actually religious. Then they wouldn't be. But what's going on in India now in Hinduism, not everyone accepts that, but it's becoming more and more accepted that the leadership of Hinduism is not so much with the spiritual or religious leaders as with political leaders and the kind of militant or semi-quasi-militant Hinduism that they promote. They're not promoting study of Bhagavad Gita or what is the purpose of life or what are the teachings of the great saints. But it's just a kind of tribal Hinduism. And it's aggressive, and they're incorporating many non-Vedic and non-traditional concepts such as nationalism, feminism, with the idea that we want to develop India as a world superpower and develop the industry and all this kind of thing. So there's no serious consideration of what are the actual teachings. Just that our religion is better than yours. You should convert to our religion, otherwise we'll suppress you or kill you. That was actually done. That's one major way in which Islam spread in India and in other parts of the world, and Christianity. In Goa, in India, the famous saint, Saint Francis Xavier, but he horribly tortured and brutally killed so many people. That was one of his major conversion methods. He's a saint. Really horrible. Things like cutting women's eyelids off. I guess they must have stopped something to stop the blood flowing, and then tying them up and killing their baby in front of them. How nasty can you get? Okay. It's difficult to imagine anything more nasty than that. He's a saint. Why? Because he did the good thing. What the hell if you cut those Hindus to pieces? Anyway, they're going to hell, so we can just give them a introduction while we're here. Yeah. So this religious fighting, it's religion, tribalistic or tribal religionism. No serious consideration of what is actual spiritual knowledge. Here with this verse is here, Jnanam Avritya Dehina. This lust is the enemy. It keeps us in material life because it covers our spiritual knowledge. But this tribal religionism, it increases the identification with the body. So it's really acting against the real purpose of religion. The Vedanta Sutras begin, Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now we should inquire into the nature of reality, or God. Brahma could be translated as God in a very broad way. Now we should inquire. That requires to be in the mode of goodness. That means one should understand that I'm not this body. I'm caught in the cycle of birth and death. This is what should be promoted, not militant. Of course, militancy, that's also there in Vedic culture. The Kshatriyas are there, but that's only for the Kshatriyas. That's not for everyone, that they should be in militant consciousness. Atato Brahma Jignasa. We should come to the human platform of understanding that we are not the body, And the fact that I'm born in a particular country, or I'm born in a particular in a family which identifies itself with a certain religious path, that's not me. That is keeping us. Such consciousness keeps us in material existence. Such consciousness, it doesn't go beyond the animal level of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So this, we can have interfaith dialogue, but first we should understand what is the meaning and the purpose of religion. To say my religion, your religion, it's meaningless in the sense that the truth is one. God is one. You may say, well, we believe this and we believe that. In our religion, we believe this. The people ask us, right? They come up to you and say, what do you believe? They presume that religion is just some belief, and you believe something and someone else believes something else. But the Vedanta begins, now atato brahma jignasa. Now we should inquire into that level of reality, that level of consciousness, which is beyond the animal platform of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, identifying with the body and everything else in relationship with the body. Just one little observation. In Britain now there are so many Muslims. Didn't used to be. Now there are so many. And many people fear them. Because, well, it's open. Many Muslims say, yeah, we want to take over the country and make it into a Muslim state. And fear is there that they may be terrorists. And the huge majority of Muslims are not terrorists, but many people think that they're all potential terrorists. So some fear is there. But there's also some respect. Because there are no religious people in England, hardly, except the Muslims. If you may be a Christian, but there's no sign of any difference between a Christian and a non-Christian. That was one thing. I went to a Catholic school and I in England, and I thought, well, what's the difference? We have all these teachers who are supposed to be Catholics. Actually, many of them weren't Catholics, but some of them were, and they're telling us to be a Catholic. I didn't see any difference in the behavior of the teachers who are Catholic and any normal person outside. They all had their human foibles, and I didn't see anything spiritual. They say you're Catholic, we're Catholics. That's all. They profess to believe in something, but otherwise, they weren't any better than anyone else. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But from what I can understand, the Muslims are also respected in England because they follow something. All over the world, I see, actually not that many Muslims rise early in the morning for pre-dawn prayers, but some do, because I know, especially in some countries I visit, I go out for an early morning japa walk, and then you can see the Muslims, they go to the mosque. Not that many, but during Ramadan, they'll go five times a day. They fast all day, and people know that, and they respect. There's actually something there. They're not just calling themselves, I'm a Muslim, but they actually practice something very seriously, and people respect that. And my observation, I'm not so much in maybe in India, but in Bangladesh, our movement is quite prominent. It's quite visible, more to the Muslims, because the majority population there is Muslim, and then many of the Hindus have become ISKCON-affiliated devotees. They're already devotees in many ways, even before ISKCON came there. But many of the Muslims respect, and I suspect also in India, but we don't have much interaction with the Muslims, unfortunately. It'd be good if we did. But I suspect that they respect our movement. Definitely in Bangladesh it's there, because they know we follow principles. We rise early every day. We're vegetarian. They're not vegetarian, but they respect that we're following something. We don't drink. We don't smoke. So that's something on the side. If we actually follow some principles, people will know and respect that. Is there anything like that in Croatia now? We're largely forgotten, I guess, our movement. It was quite prominent in the 1980s. There was some respect that we follow. We're doing something. We're very serious about what we're doing. And the fact that we go out onto the streets and chant. Definitely in England, that was George Harrison. You can find he in the Veda Basin stated that he was very impressed by seeing the devotees going out every day for Harinam. Every day, even in the winter, they'd go out for Harinam. I was just thinking, actually, I'll say it to you now, but I was thinking it would be good to have here, just like in New York City, they have the program 6 hours a day, 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock every day. 1 o'clock, the kirtan has to start. There can be an earthquake. There can be all the members of the ashram can be sick, but you every day at 1 o'clock you have to start 6 hours a day Harinam Kirtan. In the warmer months in Washington Square Park, open air, and when it's cold they go down in the subway and do it. But every day they have to do it. You can do here also. You can have a book table, and they sell books. People come, they look, they ask, what is that? They sell books, and they have a donation bowl, and people give donations. You can do like that also. That'll be great. And your Hare Krishna will become famous again in Croatia if you do that. Every day, 365 days a year, Janmashtami. Then what they do on Janmashtami, they do their Harinam as usual, and then they go to the Brooklyn Temple, because there are several temples, ISKCON temples, in New York City. So they don't organize Janmashtami themselves. They go to another temple for that. Any festival, it doesn't matter. Whatever happens, they're out there. So here in Zagreb, it would have more effect, because America's huge country, and in New York, there's so many things going on, and that still then the devotees are noticed, but New Yorkers pride themselves on not being impressed by anything or anyone, because there are so many zany, wacko people, and people just walk past them. The last time I was there, I saw someone cycling down the street with he was able to, somehow he got it together. He was able to do it cycling just on one wheel and the other wheel up in the air, and he was able to keep the balance somehow. And he was wearing very few clothes, completely shaved head, covered with tattoos, and a good New Yorker, if you see him once, you just glance, you wouldn't look again, because we're not impressed by anything. We've seen everything, we've seen everyone. But still the devotees, anyway, I'm making the point that it's more difficult to make an impression in New York, but here if you do, definitely that will become known all over Croatia, because people come from all over Croatia to Zagreb, right? And I guess outside Zagreb, people think whatever goes on in Zagreb is more important, because they look up to it. Something like that. It's a suggestion. Hare Krishna. Any question? You were talking about, Devarshi, about the mosquitoes in the evening, but here in the daytime also, they're biting. Yeah. I saw there were some flying around here, just a cloud of them. Now they're not here. Anyway. It's not a major thing. They may be what in England they call gnats, which they're like, they bite, but it's not so painful as a mosquito. Something like that. I should have covered up better. Anything? Okay, we'll finish. Hare Krishna, vancha kalpa tarupyas chakripa sindhu vyabhacha patitana bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.